If you just stop for a moment, maybe tune out the noise, you can almost feel it, can't you? The sort of low hum, the constant frequency of digital life. It's everywhere. The screen glow, the notifications pinging away, that almost unconscious swipe, swipe, swipe. We're meant to be more connected than ever, technologically speaking. And yet for so many of us, there's this quiet, I don't know, dissatisfaction underneath it all, a feeling that something important, something real is kind of missing. Well, the sources we've looked at suggest this feeling isn't just you, it's maybe a signal, a sign that the way our digital world is built, its very design, might actually be working against true deep intimacy. So in this deep dive, that's our mission, to figure out why. We want to unpack the mechanics of what we're calling pixelated pleasure. We'll try to quantify the emotional costs, the real toll of all this instant gratification, and maybe most importantly, look at the antidotes. How do we build genuine, you know, sacred connection in this age? Okay, let's get into it. From consumption to co-creation.
It's such a critical question, right? Because the problem isn't just the content we're seeing online. It's baked into the architecture, the very design of the digital space. Think about it. The quick match on an app. The instant, like that constant drip feed of rewards, mm-hmm. It conditions us really to expect immediate fulfillment. And this structure, it fundamentally pushes us towards a consumption-based model for human connection. You're almost shopping for people, scrolling through options.
Instead of cultivating something.
Exactly. You're not cultivating a relationship, which is what real intimacy actually needs. Mm-hmm. It takes time, effort.
And how deep does that mindset really go? I mean, the sources connect this pattern back to a pretty old philosophical idea, the vice of lust,
mm-hmm.
but they use it in a much broader sense than just, you know, the physical.
Right. It's not just about sex. In this context, lust is described as this wider, almost unquenchable desire for, well, for temporary fulfillment, for quick indulgence. It's that consumption mindset, again, trying to fill an internal void, maybe emptiness or loneliness, mm-hmm. with constant external hits of stimulation.
And that affects everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Dating, how we even process information.
Absolutely. And what's truly fascinating, maybe a little alarming, mm-hmm. is the sheer scale of this digital hunger. Right. How quickly it's become, well, normal. If we look at the data around digitally mediated desire, let's take the pornography industry as a specific example. Mm-hmm. This is not some fringe activity anymore. We're talking about an industry valued at around $97 billion annually. That's huge.
Wow, $97 billion. And the traffic numbers, they're just staggering.
Mm-hmm.
One source mentions sites like Pornhub reportedly getting over 42 billion visits back in 2022.
Yeah.
And if you zoom out, that apparently makes up something like 30% of all internet traffic. 30%. Just let that sink in.
It's massive.
Yeah.
It represents this huge collective investment of time, energy, attention into a form of connection that's fundamentally, well, non-relational. It's solitary.
And access has changed everything too, right? It's not hidden away anymore.
Precisely. Mobile devices are the main way people access this. Now over 70% of viewers, reportedly. So what might have been a, you know, planned private act,
mm-hmm.
now becomes this spontaneous, always on, always available possibility, right there in your pocket. It's the very definition of instant gratification.
But the pleasure, the gratification,
yeah.
It doesn't seem to last, does it?
No, not really. Mm-hmm. That's the kicker. Research shows that 35% of users actually report feeling guilty after viewing.
Mm.
That's a really clear psychological dissonance, right? Between the promise of pleasure on the surface and the actual internal feeling. The external chase just doesn't solve the internal problem, whether that's loneliness or something else.
And you see that same kind of transactional, consumption-based approach spilling over from the solitary screen into the social world, right? With dating apps, hookup culture.
Definitely.
The numbers there are big, too. Something like 3 out of 10 adults in the U.S. have used a dating app. Mm-hmm. And it jumps way higher for younger adults.
Yeah, 53% for adults under 30. It's become a primary way people meet.
And the sources suggest these platforms, by their very nature, often encourage this culture of low commitment, transactional intimacy. It's designed for efficiency, swiping.
Getting through options quickly.
Right. And they link that approach to having more sexual partners, more casual encounters. It's connection, but maybe without the depth. The sources call it the illusion of form.
And that lack of depth, that transactional nature,
it
has real, measurable psychological costs. Which brings us to one of the biggest ironies here, this paradox of connectivity. We're hyper-connected online, yet loneliness is rising. Studies consistently show that when people feel lonely, turning to social media often makes them feel worse afterwards.
Worse, even if they're actively posting and interacting.
Yeah, interestingly, it holds true for both active use and just passive scrolling. The interaction seems to lack the authenticity, the genuine presence needed to actually bridge that gap.
And this detachment isn't just virtual, is it? It bleeds into our face-to-face relationships, that whole technoference thing or fubbing.
Oh, absolutely. Snubbing your partner or friend or child for your phone. We all do it, probably more than we realize.
Yeah.
Think about it. You're at dinner or trying to have a serious talk, and someone just instinctively reaches for their phone. Research shows this directly causes conflict, jealousy, and lower levels of relationship satisfaction and intimacy overall. That constant interruption of real-world presence by technology, it's seen as a major driver of this modern loneliness epidemic. It literally starves the relationship of presence.
Okay, but the cost isn't just feeling a bit disconnected or annoyed. It goes deeper, psychologically. Let's talk about the emotional toll of hookup culture specifically. It's often framed as, you know, liberation, freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources paint a more complex picture.
Mm-hmm. A much more complex picture. Mm-hmm. The research actually links participation in this kind of low commitment culture with higher levels of anxiety and depression, plus feelings of regret, guilt, sometimes even emotional detachment as a coping mechanism.
Why is that? Is it the lack of clarity?
That's a big part of it. The sort of unspoken rules, the unclear expectations. It's emotionally exhausting. It can often lead to this really fragile sense of self-worth that's completely tied to external validation, how attractive someone finds you, whether they text back. So the central theme keeps coming back, chasing purely physical pleasure without emotional commitment. It paradoxically leads away from freedom. It can trap people in this cycle of unfulfillment and emotional instability.
Wow. And now the digital world is even offering, what did the sources call them? Second wave cyber intimacies, like AI companions.
Yes. And this is where it gets really interesting and maybe a bit disturbing. These platforms offer pseudo intimacy, artificial closeness.
Pseudo intimacy.
And the danger there is that it reinforces something called intimacy solipsism.
Okay. Intimacy solipsism. Break that down. Does that just mean the AI friend tells you whatever you want to hear, basically? Traps you in your own head.
That's exactly it. Solipsism is the philosophical idea that only one's own mind is sure to exist. So an AI relationship is entirely self-referential. It's a mirror reflecting only your needs, your desires, your inputs. Mm-hmm. It never pushes back, never challenges you, never requires real vulnerability or mutual sacrifice.
Huh.
It's like a perfect narcissistic echo chamber. And the risk is that it reinforces real-world isolation by making messy, demanding, real human relationships seem unnecessary or too difficult.
Okay, so if this consumption model, this pixelated pleasure, is making us lonely, trapping us in these echo chambers, then the way out has to be something completely different, something radical.
Radically different, yes.
The sources frame that deep internal ache, that yearning for real connection, not as some kind of failure on our part, but as a, what was the phrase, a sacred summons.
Mm.
Like the pain itself is the wake-up call, the pivot point.
That's exactly the idea. The pain isn't punishment, it's an invitation. An invitation to awaken, to maybe start taking off the armor we wear.
Yeah, and there's that powerful quote, intimacy begins where armor ends. So vulnerability here isn't about weakness at all.
Not at all.
It's defined as this act of profound courage, actually, of openness, being willing to show your real emotional self, flaws and all, without fear of judgment or rejection.
Which is the absolute polar opposite of the curated, guarded, performative self we often present online, right?
Totally. But okay, how do we do that, practically speaking?
Yeah.
Especially when we've been kind of conditioned to keep that armor on tight.
Right. It's a great question. And the answer isn't some grand, dramatic gesture, usually. It's about building emotional safety, slowly, consistently, through intentional actions. It's about showing up day after day.
Okay, like what kind of actions?
Well, simple but hard things sometimes, like practicing active listening, truly listening without judgment, without planning your response while the other person is still talking. It means learning to clearly communicate your own needs and feelings without expecting your partner to be a mind reader. That takes practice.
And setting boundaries.
Crucially, setting firm boundaries. Sometimes even physical ones, like maybe agreeing to put phones in a drawer during dinner or dedicated conversation time. Consciously choosing presence.
Yeah, that feels like the direct counterpunch to your technoference, doesn't it?
It is. It's making that conscious choice, that effort to be fully present, setting aside the distractions to reclaim. Well, the sources call it sacred silence. Not necessarily literal silence, but that space between the noise where real connection can actually happen. You're reversing that frantic digital feedback loop and coming back to the source, which is right here in the moment.
And this idea of deliberate presence, it extends even into the most, well, physical aspects of connection, right? Through this concept of sacred sexuality, the sources position this as the ultimate antidote to that empty digital lust. It's presented as this holistic approach, going way beyond just the physical act.
Exactly. It reframes intimacy entirely.
Okay, but then there's this idea that love is not a feeling, it is a frequency. Now, that sounds pretty out there. It's a huge claim. How do they back that up? Is it like actual electromagnetic energy or more of a metaphor?
It's probably best understood as both, but primarily it's about a state of consciousness, a deep metaphor for alignment, for resonance.
Okay.
So when they talk about frequency, they mean a coherent state of being. Think about it. When we operate from fear or scarcity or that consuming lust, our internal state is kind of discordant, maybe low energy, agitated. Love in this context is seen as a higher coherent frequency, a state you achieve through intentionally aligning your body, mind, and spirit.
Yeah.
It's not just a passive emotion that happens to you.
So how do you cultivate that frequency?
Through intentional practices, treating the body with reverence, like a sacred vessel, not just a tool for pleasure, focusing on breath, on sensation, really being in the body, moving energy consciously through mindful presence. Through what they call emotional alchemy, which is basically learning to integrate difficult emotions, to work with them instead of suppressing them or acting them out. And ultimately, it's aimed at a kind of spiritual awakening within the connection itself. It's the complete opposite of the objectified, commodified view of people you get in digital consumption, where individuals become disposable means to an end.
So the focus shifts entirely from getting something satisfaction, validation, to simply being present with yourself and the other person.
Beautifully put, yes.
Yeah.
And the ultimate aim, the highest expression of this, is co-creation.
Co-creation.
Yeah, the philosophy phrases it like this. The mind reflects, consciousness creates, and the observer shapes the mirror it stares into.
Whoa, okay. Heavy stuff.
It sounds abstract, but think of it this way. In a truly conscious, sacred relationship, the two people act as mirrors for each other's growth, for each other's becoming.
Okay, but what does that actually look like? You know, on a random Tuesday night, it sounds amazing, but maybe hard to grasp.
It's actually quite simple, although not always easy. It means you consciously choose to hold space for your partner's authentic self, all of it. Even the messy parts, the uncomfortable parts, the parts that trigger you.
So instead of reacting when they're upset or difficult.
Exactly. Instead of getting defensive or trying to fix them, you try to recognize their behavior, maybe their triggers, as expressions of their own deeper wounds or patterns. And you respond with compassion, with support, holding that mirror gently. It requires mutual surrender, letting go of your own agenda, your need to be right, and genuinely supporting their journey of growth, trusting that they're doing the same for you. It's the absolute opposite of that self-contained, self-referential bubble of AI-like solipsism.
Huh. So the relationship itself becomes this active space for transformation for both people.
That's the heart of sacred connection, yes.
Yeah.
Recognizing that the deepest intimacy isn't just about shared pleasure, but the shared opportunity for healing and growth.
Okay. So pulling this all together, what's the takeaway for you listening right now? This problem, this pixelated pleasure, and the loneliness it breeds. It's not just some external enemy, some fault of technology we need to conquer.
Mm.
It's more like a reflection of an internal crisis, maybe. That constant craving for the next quick fix, the external hit, it's just a symptom, really, a symptom of a deeper need, a wound that hasn't been addressed. And the solution the sources point to is profoundly human. It requires what they call a renaissance of responsibility, of unity, and of presence. They really emphasize that by making conscious choices, choosing real presence over digital distraction, choosing vulnerability over keeping your armor up pretty, not just fixing something in your own life. You're actually contributing to a larger shift. You become like a gardener, planting these seeds of truth, of real connection that can ripple outwards.
Yeah. And that profound emptiness, the very thing that drives the frantic search for fleeting gratification. Maybe it's not a curse. Maybe, as the sources suggest, it's actually a blessing in disguise. Think of it like the silent tolling of a bell. Not necessarily warning that everything's collapsing, but maybe a resonating call, a call to wake up. And the time to answer that call is right now. So maybe we can leave you with this to think about. What's the one piece of armor? Maybe it's a specific defense mechanism you use, a particular digital distraction you lean on, or even an unspoken expectation you hold that you could consciously choose to just lay down starting today, to take that first step onto this path of presence.